This podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Workplace Health and Safety.
So the first title we're going to release is more informational for organizations, and it's really designed to help educate the entire population related to the new view of safety. So we get into looking at how the best-in-class organizations are utilizing these techniques to drive improvement, but ultimately set up the rest of the content that will be coming online at the end of the first quarter. This first module will be available for free, and we'll announce soon when you're able to access that content as well as where. Thank you.
All of this cool stuff's available at Underwriters Laboratory, workplacehealthandsafety.com. Think about it, you guys. They're great sponsors, and thank you for doing that. And now, let's get on with the podcast.
And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like...
So I want to take everybody with CSP at the end of their name that ever uttered the words, "You can't fix stupid," and make them never say that again. Never, ever say that again. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Conklin. Today's really interesting. Today, I'm going to challenge you a little bit. At least I want to. That's my goal. And I want to challenge you via the courtesy and kindness of the University of Queensland in Australia, actually the University of Queensland Business School. And I want to play an interview with you from a guy named Professor Mats Alvesen. Now, that's spelled M-A-T-S, Mats, first name, Alvesen, A-L-V-E-S-S-O-N, and he really is at the University of Queensland Business School. And he's going to talk about the notion of functional stupidity. That's right, I just said that, functional stupidity. And what Mats talks about in this little interview, and it's not very long, but I think it's really interesting, is he talks about the fact that organizations have created an environment where we may on the surface say we want workers to exercise free will, that's for you, David Marks, but in reality, what we want is this notion of functional stability. We don't want workers to question us. We don't want them to ask why or how. We don't want them to challenge the notion. We want them, in fact, to be obedient. We want them to be robots. We want them to be functionally stupid. Now, I think this idea is remarkably interesting, partially because if you're interested in the new view of safety, and you think about how adaptive workers improvise to solve problems in real time, the notion of functional stupidity is the opposite of adaption. And that's why we're here. We should listen to this because I think there's plenty for us to talk about. This is a pretty interesting little clip. You can check more out, and I would encourage you to do so because I think it's probably worthwhile to kind of listen to. To me, this challenge is probably nestled in the fact that we look at workers as people who exercise mental agility in order to solve problems and manage risk in real time. And Mats talks exactly about that topic. I can go on for a long time, but why should I when you can listen to Mats' interview? Enjoy this, and let's come back on the backside and talk about what this all means to us, because I think you'll find this to be incredibly interesting.
And so on. Of course, that, all that is very important, but organizations also call for people not thinking too much, to be quite focused, disciplined, to be persuaded, even seduced by powerful messages, and being happy about things without necessarily reflecting upon problems and issues. So we launched the concept functional stupidity, which refers to an inclination for people not to think critically, not to ask about the meaningfulness of what they are doing and accomplishing, and not asking for justification. Why should we do this? In many cases, organizational life and people's existence is much easier if they just follow various imperatives. So smooth action, where you don't question too much, you don't ask what's the meaning or purpose of all this, but you just comply and feel relatively happy about accepting a lot of instructions and strategies and organizations imitating others, etc. And this is a very important issue in organizations. So they sometimes are engaged in stupidity, management don't think, be happy, and that creates some advantages but also some problems for organizations and for people. The concept functional stupidity, which means that people don't think too much, but it's functional in the sense that people have an easier time to engage in instrumental work and comply and feel good about things that perhaps they shouldn't feel too good about. It points at this dilemma or combination of two ingredients, stupidity and functionality, or it works instrumentally. And I think that's been quite a good hook. The concept was actually picked up in Sweden by the official authority for Swedish language. So it was introduced as one of 40 new concepts in official Swedish language. So I think it's quite useful to think about in various contexts, including in workplaces. The key message of the idea of functional stupidity is that you can't really divide reality up into good and bad so simply. So functional stupidity, it's a mixed blessing. So it's functional in the sense that it's sometimes good if you don't think, and as managers and so on, you're into stupidity management. And a lot of management is really about that, making people happy and comply and obey and be disciplined and buy into a lot of stupid arrangements. But then it has a lot of disadvantages as well. So if people don't think, they don't engage in critical thinking, then a lot of problems may go on undetected, and sooner or later they will harm you. So a key message is that be careful about the negative effects of the stupidities and self-stupidity management that so easily tends to dominate organizations, rewarding compliance, imitating others, be happy followers, or just jump into the latest organizational fashions, like the popular branding messages and so on. So it may be functional, but also are hidden forms of stupidities that may affect people and organizations quite badly. So try to maintain an interest in critical thinking and don't discipline people that insist on asking questions such as, why should we do this? Often there is no good answer to that question, because people do things because others they do like that, or we've always done like that, or there's a very positive, seductive message indicating that this is really fine and excellent. Doesn't necessarily stand for critical scrutiny. We need to encourage much more the latter. I think in a successful economy where things are moving relatively smoothly and people are happy and positive about things, it is extra difficult to maintain a critical awareness and scrutinize what's happening and what may be problems here. So I think that all businesses, including in Australia, they need to nurture a more critical and reflective attitude to one's practices. And it's very difficult because most corporate cultures, most career tracks and so on, they tend to facilitate people that are adaptive, they say the right things, they don't disturb peace and the smoothness of organizations through asking critical questions. So maintaining or at least tolerating an attitude where this is seen as quite okay and even positive, even if it's frustrating and disturbing for people around troublemakers. I think that is really an important challenge for most contemporary businesses, including in Australia. In my own case, I think that also in higher education, there are enormous amount of stupidities going on all the time. And I think one has a duty as a relatively well-educated person to raise critical questions. Why should we do this? And often answers is, others are doing this, we are imitating others, it sounds really good, or somebody up there has thought that this is really a good idea. Sometimes it's not. And then I think that you have the duty as a contemporary person. In many cases we are quite well educated and there is access to free speech and so on, to speak out and then to raise these points and take a broader responsibility for the rationality of our organizations, our societies.
Okay, do me a favor right out of the chute. listen to this more than once. You don't have to listen to my part. My part's kind of crappy. But listen to what Matt says more than once, because there's a lot there, a ton there. In fact, one of the things he says is this notion of functional stability is not too valued. It's neither bad nor good. There are times when it's good. There are times when it's bad. There are times when it's neither. In a way, procedures really fit into that same category, because when you talk about procedures, aren't we in fact talking about the notion of functional stability? Aren't we talking about rote compliance to a set of instructions, no matter the weather, no matter what variabilities? Aren't we talking about the fact that we want workers to obey when things are in an environment where obeying is the right answer? We want them to adapt when they need to adapt. So say what you want to about stop work and the stop work authority that people have. We really want them to be functionally stupid, in Matt's terms. I don't mean that nearly as offensive as it sounds, until, in fact, and when a time appears when it looks like somebody's going to get hurt. And then we want them to actually exercise the ultimate adaption, the ultimate judgment in calling stop work. And I would suggest, and I think Matt's is saying the same thing, is that asking for us to have both is kind of a cognitive dissonance that we put on our workers environmentally and situationally. I don't know what you're thinking, but I'm thinking this notion of him saying they're not too valued and we want workers to question authority, we want workers to question power, but we want them to question power when it's truly to the advantage of the organization becomes safer or more stable. That's powerful. But then he goes on, because that's not enough. Oh, no, that would be enough on its own. That's like 10 podcasts on its own. But then he goes on to say that in a stable system, in a system that's functioning well, the need to be anything other than functionally stupid sort of goes away. So the more stable and reliable the system is, the less need there is to question the system and the less need you need workers who actually ask questions. In fact, if the system is very stable, are the questions now sort of a giant pain in the butt as opposed to an unstable system where the questions become sort of the ability to learn? This is powerful. That's why I think you should hear it twice, because who knows what's happening and when and why and how and where. But what we have to think about is how we challenge the way we think about workers. And this notion of functional stupidity sort of creates a different way to imagine at least one of the tails of the big S curve that we've just drawn. I guess the opposite tail of that would be highly adaptive improvisational. So we either want workers to obey or to be psychic or someplace in between. And I think what the professor, the good professor says, and thankfully we can actually take this and chew on it, is that it's neither one nor the other. That in fact it fits somewhere in between and the standard is constantly moving. That, my friends, is a very interesting way to think about this. And I think this podcast challenges us in many directions to look beyond the normal black and white, the blame and punish. And that is really what the new view of safety does. And it does it in a way that really challenges some assumptions we have, some biases that we have on the very surface of the way we manage work all the time. Now, you can take this to its logical conclusion, and that is, well, how's this work for an obedient worker in obedient systems? Well, here's what we know. Systems are never obedient. Systems are always constantly in the process of managing some variability. And that procedures, although they're amazing and very important to the way we operate and manage work, are always incomplete. Procedures can't plan for variability. They can't plan for unplanned events. And so procedures become the ideal state of the work. Processes become the ideal state of the work. Rules become the ideal state of the world. But all of them assume two things. One is that there is one right way. You've heard Daniel Hummerdahl talk about that. And the other is that every day in your facility is the same. And we know that's not true. I mean, we just know that's not. The reason you can't write a procedure for driving to work is because every day you drive to work, it's not the same. So now we know that procedures, albeit they're powerful tools written with the best intentions to be as accurate as they possibly can be for the ideal state, that's the black line for those of you familiar with the black line, blue line metaphor, procedures only will ever give us that ideal state. What workers manage is the variability within that procedure. And do we want workers to be questioning, smart, intelligent mechanics? Or do we want them to be dumb, rote compliance, functionally stupid mechanics? And it's weird because if I ask you this in person, if we were sitting across the table from each other, you'd look me in the eye and say, I need a thinking mechanic, not a compliant mechanic, but I need my thinking mechanic to be compliant. And that's where this gets incredibly interesting. Now, what to do for us? Well, I think the challenge is that it causes us to think differently about the work, right? There's not a right answer. I mean, these don't have right answers. Crap, if there's a right answer, we'd been done a long time ago. I mean, it's easy if there's a right answer. What there are many answers and many perspectives and many ways to look at, understand, and manage the way we manage work. And that, I think, is probably the most important part of everything we're talking about. Because what it forces us to do when we truly sit back and think about this, the reason I ask you to listen to Matt's section twice is because when we truly think about this, it's hard to imagine a world where he's not correct. And so if he's got an assumption that's pretty solid and we can build upon it, then our goal is to sort of take that assumption and move forward. So where does it take us? Well, we're right back to where we started. But we never thought we wouldn't be back where we started. So that's no surprise to any of us. Now we're in a position where what we have is work not as a linear sort of a Newtonian kind of very seductively predictable model. Now we have work where work is really this complex environment with many things going on at the same time where we're managing that work as carefully as we possibly can. And that, well, that is where we start the discussion. I don't know where we end it. We could take it a lot of places. We could talk about the importance of learning, right? Which I talk about all the time. Because the only way we'll ever understand the complexities of the system is to de-simplify, right? We don't want to look at it in the simple, most seductive way. We want to look at how the expectation of the worker changed based upon the variability of the worker. And so what we really want is we want these remarkable workers who have this amazing ability to know when they need to be compliant and to know when they need to move farther and adapt. And our guess is that is, in fact, the variability that manages the work we do. So enter Eric Hallnagel, right? And we can talk about the resonance model and the way many variabilities come together and create work for us. And that, my friends, is our discussion. That's the podcast. What'd you think? This is a great one. And please do me a favor. I've asked you before, but do me a favor. Go back and listen to this again. Just the little lecture section. It's about 7 minutes long, so it's not very long. Dig into it. And the second time you'll hear more than the first time. And the third time I listened to it, I heard way more than I did the first and second time. And that's what it's all about. Our chance to have these conversations is everything. This isn't new knowledge. We've always known this existed. But now we're talking about it. And actually, thanks to the University of Queensland, we have some language. I mean, it's language. If you go to Sweden, it's in the Swedish dictionary. We heard that earlier, right? That is our challenge. So I hope you're having a good time, and I hope the podcast is doing what they need to do for you. It is always super fun to spend time with you. Everything's great here. Sounds like it's pretty good at your place. That's good. Keep it going, man. We'll talk more, I'm sure. Until then, I want you to learn something new every single day, and I'm sure you did today. I definitely want you to have as much fun as you can possibly squeeze into work, and for goodness sakes, be safe.
Stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me.
And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.